This is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. Are you one of the 30 million Americans suffering from diabetes or among the 86 million with prediabetes? What you put into your mouth is crucial to balancing your blood sugar. Joining us is nutrition and diet expert Katie Cavuto, who's going to share an everyday superfoods approach to planning, cooking, and eating with diabetes. A great segment ahead, and it all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is the official dietitian for the Philadelphia Phillies and team nutritionist for the Philadelphia Eagles. She earned her culinary arts and culinary nutrition degrees from Johnson & Wales University, a master's in nutrition from Tufts University. Her new book, Whole Cooking and Nutrition, shares more than 150 delicious whole food dishes that are also diabetic friendly. This book promotes vibrant, flavorful recipes that will renew the joy of eating. Welcome to the show, Katie Cavuto.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on the show. You know, I've interviewed many of today's top experts in alternative medicine, nutrition, and diet. Hands down, the one thing they seem to all agree on is that diabetes can be controlled and in some way even reversed in some cases by simple diet modifications. Now, your book shows how to address this issue without having to eat like a rabbit. What inspired you to put this book together?
You know, I think the thing that that really inspired me, I've worked with so many different demographics of people in the nutrition realm over my years, and one of the things that really kept sticking out to me was just all of the negative messages that we have around food, and in particular, prescriptive diets. You know, we're often have a diagnosis like diabetes or cardiovascular disease, and we're put on a prescriptive diet, which immediately feels like I'm going to be deprived, this is a punishment, and that directly influences that person's ability to really stick with the program. So my initial real inspiration for this book was to just start off the bat changing that message. And really speaking to everyone, people with diabetes and those who don't, by just saying, listen, a diabetic diet, a heart-healthy diet, they are all essentially a healthy way of living. And how can we create positive messages around food instead of focusing on deprivation and numbers and weight, choosing a positive intention that we eat to nourish our bodies, and those positive intentions, it's a form of self-love and self-respect, and it's something that I think we can all hold on to and feel really good about instead of the alternative, which, you know, leaves us feeling deprived.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned diet and deprivation, and that's so crucial because people start a diet and it's just not fun. They don't look forward to it. It doesn't satisfy their brain, their body, and they don't stick with it. And what you sound like you've created is something that, hey, this is something that's a lifestyle. The word diet starts with the word die. I've never liked that. I like a lifestyle because the actual word diet comes from dietia, which means change lifestyle, meaning part of your life. So you've actually got to the true definition of diet.
Yeah, and I think it's really about even taking some words out of our vocabulary. You know, I instead of focusing on good foods and bad foods, I really try to just change the word choices and say nourishing and less nourishing. And I love that you talked about satisfaction because that is so important. When we talk about, you know, why do we make food choices? We choose things that taste good. And then that is important to me for two reasons. One, satisfaction. So, you know, I kind of always look at, I use the example of turkey bacon, and we all think turkey bacon is quote unquote healthier. Yet the entire time we eat turkey bacon, we resent the experience. We don't feel satisfied. We wish we just had the bacon. And if we're not satisfied, then we end up with our hand in the potato chips, you know, a couple minutes later. So there's something to kind of simplifying those nutrition messages, choosing to nourish our body the majority of the time, and then allow ourselves to have the foods that we love, you know, in moderation, of course. But the focus, too, is why do we make those food choices? Because they taste good. So much of this book is about slowing everybody down and challenging them to engage in their eating experience and to actually taste their food. Because we can have one bite of ice cream, and if we show up and give ourselves permission to enjoy it, and we savor it, and we really engage in the joy of that eating experience, that one bite of ice cream is wildly satisfying, and we don't need to eat the whole pint. So that's why it's not about deprivation.
Right. Let me ask you, I interviewed a guy named Dr. William Davis, author of The Wheat Belly Diet, who shared compelling research on how wheat is more detrimental to diabetics than sugar. What's your opinion on wheat? Is that something that we should watch out for?
You know, I really don't think that nutrition is one size fits all, and that's something I talk about a lot in the book. I think one of the things that we've lost is our own intuition. And right. One of my kind of healthy eating mantras is that we need to eat foods that make us feel good, both physically and emotionally, and in a positive way. And when it comes to things like wheat, even dairy for a lot of people, I often remind people to really check in with themselves and consider the way certain foods make them feel. I don't personally recommend a gluten-free diet for everyone, though I do think the evidence is very compelling. But with that being said, I think it's very important that we are intuitive about how certain foods make us feel and that we avoid foods that don't make us feel good. And I think for so many people, we don't recognize how good we actually can feel. We think it's normal to feel like crap. So I'm all for taking some of those foods out of our diet, even for a period of time, and seeing if we see a shift in our fatigue levels, you know, our blood sugar.
You bring up a point where it almost sounded like you were citing what I said last show. I said the same thing about wheat and gluten and oatmeal. It's like, hey, trust your gut. What does your gut tell you? What does your body tell you? I love oatmeal. I love it. It makes me feel good. Now, does everybody eat oatmeal and feel good? No. So watch out, folks. The same with the wheat. I'm like, he's scaring people off wheat. I'm like, but I love wheat and I feel great. So you bring up such a good point.
Nutrition is not one size fits all. You know, I work with a huge population of cancer patients as well, and they automatically go into a place where they feel like they have to be vegan. And one of my reminders to them is, you know, we don't all thrive on a vegan or vegetarian diet. Some of our bodies need animal proteins, and that's where we thrive. So that's where that intuition really is important. And I think we have to make decisions that are personalized to our bodies, but with really solid intentions in mind.
Right. Now, you use the term whole food ingredients. What actually defines a whole food and what makes it worthy of being accepted in a recipe?
Yeah. So for me, I really encourage all of my my clients, my readers, to eat to nourish their body. And the most nourishing foods are whole foods that are in their most, you know, full intact form. Because once we start processing foods, we lose some of the nutrient density. And as we know, with heavily processed foods, we're also adding, you know, so many things back in. And this is really important to me in the realm of the diabetic diet, because for so long, diabetics were prescribed very highly processed foods, from artificial sweeteners to, you know, low-fat, no-fat foods that were really lacking in nutrients. So I felt like we were missing the point, you know? So this is, again, it's like taking it back to the basics, simplifying those nutrition messages, eat real foods, eat more vegetables, celebrate the foods that are really going to allow you to thrive. And that's also why I included the section on everyday, 85 everyday superfoods, because to me, these everyday foods like that apple or your oatmeal have so many amazing, inspiring, nourishing qualities that we don't often think about. And food gratitude is something I talk about a lot, because I think if we're going to celebrate that nourishing plate of food, we have to have food gratitude. And that really starts with, why is this food so good for me? Why should I be excited about eating it? And again, shifting to those more positive intentions.
Yeah, you bring up such a good point. I drink this lousy tasting green yucky drink, and I'm just saying it tastes bad because I can't fool my taste buds to saying anything else, but it's so good for me. And while I'm drinking it, I read the ingredients like, oh, it's got kelp, it's got spinach, it got spirulina, and you know, flaxseed, and what it does for you. So you bring up a good point. Concentrate on the good, and even foods that are, you know, you don't maybe love them, but that your body does. That's the key. Your body loves them. Isn't that worth it? Isn't that worth
it? It is worth it, and that's where we get back to that self-love and self-respect. And once we like really ground ourselves in that, we start to feel really good about the choices that we're making, and all of a sudden our experience is very, very different, and it's very empowering. And that's when positive change occurs.
That's great. Is there a healthy diabetic friendly sugar alternative that you found that works well with recipes that need a little bit of sweetness?
So I actually stay away from any of the sugar alternatives. I'm not a fan of artificial and no-calorie sweeteners. Their sweetness factor is just so, so high that I think, plus the zero-calorie factor, even for the natural versions like stevia, you know, anything that's zero calories, we're kind of giving our, to me, that's dieting mentality. We're giving ourselves the okay then to have as much as we want because it's zero calories. Well, it's also zero nutrients. And when it's so, so sweet, we're then training our palate to want and crave sweet really regularly.
True.
So to me, again, it's like cutting out the crap, simplifying the message, going back to natural sweeteners, something like a really good maple syrup or a really good honey, and then weaning our need, you know, using smaller amounts of sweetener. A great example, you know, a traditional yogurt can have in the upwards of 4 to 5 added teaspoons of sugar, which is absurd if you think about how small that little cup of yogurt is. So I always think about a healthy upgrade to that would be getting a plain yogurt, taking 1 teaspoon of a good quality sweetener like a maple or a honey, adding some fruit, adding your nuts and seeds, and now you have this beautiful, nourishing meal or snack that's mildly sweet but really satisfying.
Right. And as you mentioned, then you start to enjoy it. It's like salad dressings. You got to watch out for those. And you know something? I did a salad, and there's so much going on there, like a smorgasbord, fireworks of tastes in there anyway. Squeeze a little lemon on there. Try it even without dressing. It's so good, folks. I know you got that mental block that you have to grab a bunch of dressing on there. But
isn't
that something?
Well, and my thing with salad dressing, too, especially the store-bought salad dressings, I have thrown one too many a hissy fit in the grocery store because – you know, and we've all been taught vinaigrettes are the best. Wow. And we all aim, you know, we head for that vinaigrette when we're in the grocery store. So I have these two rules, right? These are my two rules that I live by when I'm buying any kind of packaged food. I ignore the front of the package because it's advertising. It's simply trying to convince me that it's good for me. So I completely ignore it and I head straight for the ingredient list because that's how I'm going to figure out what I'm actually eating.
Right.
And then I ask myself two questions. One is, can I buy these ingredients in the grocery store? And then a side note is, would I buy these ingredients in the grocery store? And then I also ask myself, how would I make this myself? And when we think about salad dressings, if we made a salad dressing at home, almost every person I talk to says they would use olive oil because olive oil is so highly protective, so rich in antioxidants, so anti-inflammatory.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, its benefits just go on and on. Yet, it is impossible to find a salad dressing in the grocery store, even organic varieties that use olive oil. They almost all use soybean oil, even the organic varieties, which is a highly inflammatory oil. So it's like we have to even question the norm, you know, and push ourselves to think outside the box a little bit.
That's such a good point about that. And you know, I've made salad dressings. It's so easy.
So easy.
I'm telling you.
So
I mean, that maybe 60 seconds, and that's if you're telling a few jokes between. It really is.
I usually tell people, I'm like, empty whatever salad dressing bottle you have, you know, your glass bottle at home, empty it out. It's half oil, half vinegar and or citrus, a little like teaspoon of mustard, and then you give it a shake, you know, and we literally like do the dance because I'm so much about making the kitchen fun. You know, we always come up with these playlists for exercise and how do we make exercise more fun? Well, how do we make our time in the kitchen more fun? It's like we should have, you know, come up with a playlist, your favorite songs, put it on while you're in the kitchen, make that a more enjoyable experience, like dance while you're making your salad dressing and shaking it up in the jar. These are the ways we create joyful eating experiences and feel empowered by the choices that we're making.
And you burn calories if you're doing a little dance while you're cooking.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a good point. Now, let me ask you, you're the official dietitian for the Philadelphia Phillies and Eagles. How does that compare, I guess, the diet you use for them to the cookbook you put together for diabetics?
So I'm just going to do small corrections. So I am the dietitian for the Phillies, and I actually worked with the Flyers for several years, but I have not worked with the Eagles yet.
Okay, Flyers.
But, you know, the thing that really speaks to me is the fact that I work with the Phillies. I have a 5-year-old. I have my diabetic patients, and I actually work with a huge population of breast cancer patients. And my message is always the same. It's eat foods that nourish your body. And I think that to me is so powerful that I am having the same nutrition conversations with my professional athletes as I am with my 5-year-old, you know, or really every demographic that I come in contact with. And I think nutrition messages have become so overwhelming and so negative that any opportunity I have to simplify it, I get out there and I do it. Because the reality is, even if you... if the only thing your listeners go home with is eat more vegetables, that's a win. Because if half that plate is vegetables and they challenge themselves to eat more vegetables every single day, it naturally crowds out some other foods without even knowing it. You know, so it's these simple little intentions can have a really dramatic impact on our lifestyle.
But you bring up such a good point. I want to make sure people got that. So the athletes, professional athletes, their diet is the same that's in your book. So it's not just for diabetics. It's not just for the pre-diabetics. It's for everyone, because blood sugar matters. The chemistry matters. Our weight matters. And this book sounds like it hits pretty much the gamut of all that for everyone.
And healthy fats. That is so important to me, because I, you know, for so long we shunned fats. And from a blood sugar control standpoint, those healthy fats are so, so important. You know, making sure that we're getting those nuts and those seeds and that we're eating avocado. One of my favorite tricks that I do is every night when I make my dinner, I actually drizzle a little olive oil on it before I eat it, just because that uncooked olive oil is so nutrient dense. And then I'm making sure I'm getting those healthy fats, because the fats are what's satisfying and the fats are what helps to control our blood sugars. And I think for so long we were so fearful of the fats that that's something that people have a really difficult time transitioning their mentality around. And I'm just here to say, you know, eat those healthy fats, nuts and seeds on everything, savor that avocado. Feel generous with your olive oil. The fats are never going to be the problem for the diabetic.
And everything you just mentioned fills you up so you don't eat as much and you lose weight.
You're satisfied.
So
right.
It's a great circle there. That's great. Hey, if you could remove, let's say, 3 unhealthy ingredients found in the majority of kitchens in America, what would you pick? I'm curious. If you were walking there and said, oh, this has got to go.
What would I pick? Margarine, for sure. Okay. I'm a purist. I'm olive oil and butter all the way. So that's definitely something I take out of a lot of my clients' fridges. I would say quality of olive oil is something that I find. I do a lot of work in home with clients, teaching them how to cook, and I often find that quality of olive oil, really staying away from anything that is refined. You know, my rules with choosing an olive oil are make sure it's in a dark bottle, make sure it says extra virgin olive oil and first cold pressed. Again, celebrating those fats instead of thinking we need to do something refined or light, because if it's refined or light, we've lost its nutrients.
Right. And it's not sitting out there at the kitchen window, right? Stored right there in the kitchen. The sunshine hitting it. That's a no-no.
Exactly, exactly. And then I would say anytime we can decrease our processed food intake and replace it with a whole food, that's a positive thing. So while that's a bit more broad, I do think that that's a really easy goal that people can set for themselves. I'm just going to decrease my process, you know, I'm going to swap a processed food for a whole food. And if you do that once a week, you know, gradually you're going to start eating more whole foods and those processed foods are going to become a little bit more sparse.
That's great. And the little time I get left, I wanted to bring up the gut, because you actually talk about healthy living, mentioned in your book, is to heal your gut that's so important. What does the gut have to do with pancreas, sugar, and why is healing it such a focus for diabetics?
I mean, we're learning so much about our gut microbiome and how interrelated it is to so many facets of our health. So I look at all of my nutrition recommendations as a like risk to benefit ratio. Right. And when it comes to eating foods that are going to be healthy for our gut, so even starting to integrate some fermented foods into our diet, and so many of those fermented foods, things like kimchi and sauerkraut and pickles that are fermented with just salt and water, no vinegar, we're also increasing our vegetable intake. And those vegetables are so beneficial because that is the food for those healthy bacteria. It's just so beneficial across the board that there's really no reason not to start integrating some of these foods into our diet more.
Plus, you know, if you're eating healthy and your gut's not healthy, how are you supposed to process that food through the gut system into the bloodstream?
Exactly.
So that's the portal. If
that intention is I eat to nourish my body and your body is unable to actually digest and metabolize those nutrients, then, you know, we're missing out on all of that goodness.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up fermented foods. So many people don't talk about that. They're so healthy, the probiotics and the healing of the gut. So I think that's something.
And they're so flavorful. One of the things I actually recommend is when we tend to have sugar cravings, fermented foods have such robust flavors like the kimchis and the sauerkrauts, even things like kombucha, that when we have a sugar craving, they like nip it in the bud. It's pretty amazing if we have, you know, a small serving of a fermented food, it's so exhilarating to our palate that it actually ends up curbing some of those sweet cravings. It's one of my favorite little tips.
Great. Fantastic information. Where can people go to learn more?
Yeah. So you can visit my blog, which is my name, katiecavuto.com. Also, Nourish, Breathe, Thrive. That's actually the name of the blog. So either one will take you to the website, katiecavuto.com or nourishbreathethrive.com. And then the cookbook, Whole Cooking and Nutrition, is available at most major bookstores, Amazon, and through the American Diabetes Association.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for being here on the show today. Such great information, folks. You heard it. The book is called Whole Cooking and Nutrition, an Everyday Superfoods Approach to Planning, Cooking, and Eating with Diabetes. And you can get that at Amazon.com. And as she said, you can check out her website, katiecavuto.com. Read her blogs, healthy recipes. Sign up for a free newsletter. Stay in touch with her. You can follow Katie on Twitter at katiecavuto_rd. And for my daily health tweets, follow me at Dr. David Friedman. Stay up to date on all of our latest health and wellness segments at toyourgoodhealthradio.com, iHeartRadio, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Never miss a segment. More to come. Stay tuned. Stay well.